Brother Nadir Ahmed, please come to the mic and start your 30 minutes rebuttal time, inshallah.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry about that hot mic. It just kept going. I went, actually, and it just kept going anyways. Yeah, I'd like to thank Denny Huron for his presentation. Let me begin by stating that Denny Huron said, well, there could be many human explanations, and he gave many examples of how, you know, Aristotle could have done it this way and stuff like that. Here is the point to be noted. From the very beginning, I already stated that, yes, just because you have a scientific statement in the book, that does not automatically mean that it is from the Word of God. I, in fact, gave all the 8 different scenarios in the algorithm. I would like for everyone to turn to the algorithm, and I went one step beyond that, and I cited you all of the 8 possible human explanations for each and every single one of these verses. Anyways, let me start off by commenting on what Denny has said. So he said the thing about bees, that some people have mentioned male bees, some people have mentioned female bees, and some people have mentioned sexless bees. Well, there's a very good reason for this, because it's a 50-50 chance. It's either male or female. So some people got it right, some people got it wrong. That's why you see some books you'll find male bee, some books you say female bee. But my point is that the Quran got it right. Again, I also showed you that it does not matter what the other books state. And of course, I think Denny agreed with me on this point. He was only saying, well, I'm just showing you that it can be done by human beings. He's not saying that the book author of the Quran was plagiarizing, because of course we know that's illogical, or else he would have copied a lot of the wrong information as well in that book. So, you know, that I think that point has been noted. Anyways, so that's my point on B. So the possibility, the probability of guessing the right B is 1/2. It doesn't matter what book you find it in. The probability is 1/2, and that's very important as we continue. It's 1/2. Anyways, let's talk about Iram. He said that it is possible. First of all, he agrees with me, which that if you look in any books or any historical books, there has never been mentioned about any city named Iram. It was only mentioned in the Quran. He was saying it's hypothetically possible that maybe, some way, somehow, the author of the Quran somehow knew of the city called Iram. I don't know how, but maybe some way he has done that. So, okay, so he basically said that basically, you know, and that's again, maybe with a coincidence or it was luck or something like that, and I cited that in my algorithm. So he did not agree with that. He said, but you know, Sodom and Gomorrah was also mentioned there. Bringing up the Old Testament is actually irrelevant in tonight's discussion, because we as Muslims believe that the Old Testament was revealed by God. We believe that, but it has been changed and it has been altered to basically suit man's need. And also the same thing goes with Talmud, you know. Basically you'll find some of God's word in actually many of the books, because they have corrupted that book. And that is not just my view, but that's also the Christian, it's also the biblical view. Read Jeremiah 8:8, in which it says, how can you say that we are wise when we have the law of the Lord, when the lying pen of the scribes have handled it falsely? So that's even what the Old Testament itself claims. Anyways, I don't want to get too much on the Bible here, as, again, that could be another red herring. Okay, let's talk about barriers. He said Aristotle had some familiarity with it. I already mentioned that in my beginning. I told you how Aristotle believed how the salt and water, salt and fresh water gets mixed. Or, I'm sorry, how you explain the phenomenon of salt and fresh water. He explained it like eating a food, and then when you go to the bathroom, then, you know, what comes out, he said, that's like how salt and fresh water. I've already explained all of that. So, but notice, this is the point to be noted. Aristotle had no clue, no idea that there was actually a physical barrier between the salt and the fresh water. He had no idea of this. And notice also another thing, the things which he did write about salt and fresh water, that is all observable to man. Meaning, if I were to conduct experiments on salt and fresh water, and I had no, and this was, or a man 1400 years ago were able to do this, he would be able to also come to the same conclusion. So his observations were observable. That's a point to be noted also. So yes, he talked about that picnic line, but he didn't talk about the barrier. As far as this is going back to my issue of waters cannot transgress, you know, in that ayat, again, I think I agree with Dennis or Denny here on in the sense this is all a matter of interpretation. What do you mean by waters cannot transgress? What some people will say, because it in itself is not a very clear wall. Some people will say, look, what it means is that you have two bodies of water. The salinity, the temperature on that side is one, and the salinity, temperature, density on that side is something else. So that shows that these two bodies of water do not mix. So some people will explain like that. Like I said, I agree it's almost impossible to try to find this type of scientific error, but I guess that I agree with him that we will not discuss that tonight. We can perhaps make a separate debate, like how I debated Richard Carrier, in which he unsuccessfully basically tried to show there were scientific errors in the Quran. But anyway, let me move on. He also spoke about the darkness in the sea. Now let me pause here for 1 second because I want to make a very important note also. I forgot to make this in the beginning. Denny Hiron is not saying that these verses do not agree with modern science. He never made that claim on any of these. Basically, what he said was that there's possible human explanations for it. So that's also very important, which should be noted. He said that, well, you know, this issue about the darkness of the seas, well, you know, when I'm in a pool and I see less visible water, you know, and I can see my feet, it gets less visible, maybe the author of the Quran saw the same thing, and then he used his intelligence or something and figured out that, yes, the deep dark seas are, you know, in the dark, deep ocean, it is complete darkness. Again, this is all conjecture. The point is that the issue about the depth and the darkness of the deep dark seas you will not find in any book. So basically, what Denny is basically saying here is that this could have been a coincidence or luck. Go back to the algorithm, which I have posted for you, and look at what is, I think that's B. Oh, no, I'm sorry, C. That is luck. So he's basically saying what he's doing is that he's bouncing back and forth. He's saying that's luck. I'm sorry, that's could be a good guess. That could be a coincidence. That could be a good guess. That could be a coincidence. He's bouncing back and forth between the two options because he agrees they do match up with modern science. So anyways, let me go on to the issue about nearer land. He brought up an issue where, you know, most commentators translate, the point about that the depth of the, the lowest point on the earth is near Jerusalem. And that is, and so basically the Quran used a word for that in which you will find both nearer land as well as the lowest point. My question to him was, why did the author of the Quran use a particular word which has both meanings? This is my question number one. He said, well, most people, they translate it as nearer land. That is because for the people who don't know science, or let's say for the person living, 1,000 years ago, that's going to make more sense to him than lowest land. But my point stands that it does not matter. You can use any one of the meanings, nearer land or lowest point. The word means both. So basically, to put it up in a nutshell, what Denny is basically saying is that it was an amazing coincidence. It is an amazing coincidence that the author of the Quran used a word which has both meanings. Okay. He said about the issue about sent down iron. He said, well, God also sent down a book. Again, these are all red herrings. That does not mean anything. He did not refute the point that this is a scientifically correct statement. Basically, what he is saying about sending down iron is that this could be a coincidence, another coincidence. Maybe he was referring like it's God's gift or something. But even in that interpretation, again, that does agree with modern science because it is very clear that the Quran is stating that iron could not be produced by Earth. Leaf of grass is from the stars. Again, this is something, he says, well, you know, the elements, the basic elements of it, could have been created from outside of the universe. Read the verse. It says, leaf of grass is from stars. And of course, the person referring to those stars up above, we know that's not scientific. This is a scientific error which you have pointed out in the book. But perhaps someone can look at it and say, okay, there could be some scientific basis for it. I'm going to give that to you, no problem. About orbit. He said orbit, you see, Ptolemy also believes it's in Aristotle. I pointed out before earlier that it is irrelevant. It is completely irrelevant what people wrote about it before. The question is, how was the author of the Quran able to decipher what are the true statements in an ocean of falsehood? Therefore, the mere fact that this is something mentioned before does not disprove its evidence. The verse chapter which I gave you is in complete agreement with modern science. The sun and the moon do indeed have orbits. And of course, I don't believe Denny is here tonight to even suggest the idea that maybe this was a plagiarization, because of course you would copy many of the wrong errors. He was only trying to show that a human being could have done it. Again, what Denny is basically saying on this point is that it is another coincidence that the Quran is matching up with modern science. Okay, having said all of that, I would just like to bring up another point here. I'm going to kind of share with you a small little story here. And I think because from this small story, I think it's going to give us some valuable lessons. So I'm kind of going to get off topic here, but it's very much directly related to what you were talking about. Now, you know, I was on TV, you know, I was watching TV and I was watching, you know, a murder trial. I'm just going to make it like a mock murder trial. There was a man who was accused of killing his girlfriend. First, and there were many pieces of evidences that the prosecutors had against him. There are 6 pieces of evidence. First, he claimed that he was going to kill his girlfriend, number one. Number two, he actually bought a knife the same week that his girlfriend was stabbed, and it was the same type of knife. Number three, he was the last seen with her 1 hour before her death in a fight, and he was pushing her into the car. Number four, blood was found in his car also. Number five, he claimed that he mysteriously lost a knife that he just bought a couple of days before. Number six, the very same day of the murder, he said to a local friend that I'm going to take care of her so that she will never bother anyone again. Okay, so anyways, here's my point. There's no question in anyone's mind that this man is clearly guilty of the murder of this woman. And there's no court around in the entire world that would not prosecute this man and send him to jail based upon this evidence. I don't think there's any question about that inside anyone's mind. But what if he tried to plead innocent? What if this man tried to plead innocent? I don't think that this man who's done this would ever claim that all of the 6 pieces of evidence given, which I just said, were all a coincidence. And that's a fact. In fact, the explanation is so silly that even the defendant would not offer that, nor would the attorney in a court of law come up on court day and say, yes, all those 6 pieces of evidence is all just an amazing coincidence. Anyways, let me move on to my point here. My point is that we could look at each and every one of these pieces of evidence individually. Remember, this is a key word, individually. And we look at this piece of evidence. Let's take this first example. He claimed that he was going to kill his girlfriend. Well, you know, that in itself is not conclusive evidence to prosecute him, right? To convict him. Because, you know, like I was saying to my wife and my brother, man, if you don't get out of my room, I'm going to kill you. Does that mean I actually wanted to kill my brother and my wife? Well, of course not. So this is basically the same situation that we are seeing with the Quranic verses. That yes, there could be it may be from a higher source or it may not be. Same thing is happening here with each and every one of these pieces of evidence. Maybe he is guilty, maybe he is not. In both cases, the evidence is inconclusive based upon this one piece of evidence alone. If you just look at this evidence alone. Now, of course, that holds true for each and every one of these six pieces of evidence. Alone, it's going to be very hard to prosecute this man, and he probably would get away. But now, here is what I would like to ask people to do. Let us take a look at the evidence, not individually, but collectively. Let us look at the evidence collectively. So when we ask this question, how do you explain all of these six incidents happening to you? Then it becomes clear that this is not a coincidence. Because you're saying, okay, fine. You claimed you're going to kill a girlfriend. Okay, that in itself is not proof. But you also bought a knife that same week. How do you explain both of these? So what I'm asking you to tonight is not look at the evidence individually, but look at it collectively. If you were to look at this evidence collectively, which I just stated, I don't think there's any question that this man is guilty. Because what your brain basically just did, whether you realize it or not, you looked at number one, you know, that he claimed he's going to kill his girlfriend. In your mind, you came up with a probability, maybe 1 over 10 that he's innocent, 1 over 50, whatever. And then you look at the second piece of evidence. And then your brain basically did the same thing. Well, that's maybe 1 out of 50 chance. So you multiplied the probability of the first one and the probability of the second piece of evidence, and then you went down and you did all six pieces of evidence, and you came up with a number like 1 over 10 million. The chances are that it is 1 over 10 million that all of this is just done by chance or by just pure luck, that is clear that you are guilty, because the chances of you being innocent are so low. Anyways, now what I'm asking for people to do is put the same logic to the Quran. Look at the evidence collectively, not individually. Up to this point, Denny and also myself, we are looking at the evidence collectively. Now let's look at the evidence collectively, and let's see what we come up with. Okay. The author of the Quran made 8 brilliant, scientifically correct statements, which of course I basically mentioned. So thus far, we have seen many verses in the Quran which foretell science and archaeology before it was discovered. So we're going to look at the 8 pieces of evidence collectively. If everyone can turn to the algorithm, which I gave to you, let's look at E, common sense. What we're doing now, we're asking the question, how do we account for all of these verses in the Quran which agree with modern science? Not individual verses. This is the question we are now beginning to answer. In fact, I'm going to cut and paste this question because it's pretty important. How do you account for all of these verses in the Quran which agree with modern science? Well, look at E. I don't think it's common sense, so we can cross that out. Perhaps a scientific fact was observable, as in the case of Aristotle. No, I don't. Many of these things are not observable, like the issue of, the bees as well as, iron bees fell down. None of that stuff is observable. Perhaps the information already pre-existed in history. Well, of course, we know that's not true. In the sense that the author of the Quran plagiarized from some other source. I don't think that's true either, because, in order to make this claim, you have to show up other stuff which the author of the Quran also copied from that book. Because if you're copying from a corrupt source, or the Aristotle, Bible, whatever, you're also going to copy the same error. So on your little list, go ahead and cross out E, F, and G. Let's look at A and C now. Perhaps the author of the Quran was a great scientist or a great genius, and that's how he came up with these conclusions, which is, of course, what Denny tried to allude to with the issue of the darkness of the deep oceans, that maybe the Quran, just basically was a very smart guy, and he figured it out from looking at the hazy water on the feet. So let's take a look at these options here. We all know that scientists make discoveries by trial and error. That is how they make discoveries. As we saw in the case of Aristotle, he made 7 scientific errors in regarding bee study, right? So my question is, how many scientific errors do we find in the Quran, in relations to that subject he was studying, and it was 1/0? So we know that the author of the Quran was not a scientist. Again, another point is, and it doesn't matter how good of a scientist you are, the statements in the Quran can only be discovered with the aid of modern technology and advanced equipment and sophisticated methods, like the lowest point of Earth, Iron, B, orbit. You cannot discover, no matter how good of a scientist you are, you'll never come to this conclusion. So we know that the author of the Quran was not a scientist or a genius. What about, and also another point, how was the author of the Quran able to escape 1,000 pages of hadith literature? And even his close friends like Abu Bakr and Aisha, his wife, radiallahu anhu, he hid his true profession as a scientist to the whole world. How was that able to do so in light of the fact that the life of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was an open book? We even know how he went to the bathroom. That's how mundane issues we've recorded about him. So all I'm trying to say is that I don't think he was a great scientist he was a genius. And I think Denny is also saying the same thing. That's why he said he pretty much leaned toward the idea that this was a coincidence or pretty much a good guess. Just a coincidence or a good guess. So basically what you can do now, go ahead and cross out A and C. Let's look at coincidence. Now remember, coincidence means that you had no intention of making these scientific statements. It was a complete accident. Coincidence can also be ruled out, because we see here from the statements that the author of the Quran is making a concerted effort to speak about science. The author of the Quran is willfully and intentionally attempting to speak about scientific principles and how our universe is created and how things work in there. One good example is like the verse on embryology. First there was the alaqa, then there was the mudga. I'm sure Denny knows what I'm talking about. So, but coincidence means you had no intention of doing so. It was a complete accident. So on that point, I don't think so. And now let's make a coincidence. With coincidence, we know luck is involved. So let's look at what are the probabilities of making these type of coincidences. Let me ask you this question. What do you think about the possibility of, if I claim to be a prophet and I wrote a book, and in that book I started writing my beliefs and my views down, what do you think are the possibilities that I will write down something by accident that will agree with a scientifically correct statement that people don't know about now but will be discovered tomorrow? And this is all done by accident. And I had no intention of saying something scientific. I was just describing my dog, you could say. So what do you think are the chances of that happening? Let's make a probability here. Anyway, then now let me add some more food for thought. Before I do that, let me tell you the number I came up with. I came up with 1/500,000. Actually, I came up with 1/5 million, but I want to make things easy for Denny here. Here's the reason how I came up with that number, 1/500,000. I say that because think of all the people in the world who have written something in their life today. How many people do you know that was writing something? I don't care what it was. It could have been an email to a girlfriend, a resume, a spy novel, a horror novel. And in that book, they wrote something which actually agreed with something which only scientists discovered later. And this was all done unintentionally and by accident. Well, I think that happens to 1/500,000 people. That is the number I've come up with. Let's look at this last option. Maybe it was a good guess. You know, a person trying to guess in the year 600, you know, as far as what these scientific probabilities are, the probabilities are astronomical as far as what it could be. let's go ahead and see what the, if we were to, let's say the author of the Quran was going to guess at all of this stuff. The probability of the bee is one half, right? Because a bee could be either male or female. So it's one half. But what about Elam? What if the author of the Quran guessed about the city which archaeologists only discovered later? So here's the question I'm asking. Let's say everyone just sit here and guess. You know, well, let's say I'm just going to sit here and guess. I'm going to guess about a city which no one knows about today, but it exists, but archaeologists will one day discover this city, and I'm going to try to guess the name of that city. So what do you think the probabilities of me actually being successful in doing that? Well, I'd put it 1 over 1,000. I'm sorry, 1 over 10,000. That is the probability of that guess. And so basically, for all of the scientific miracles, all eight, I made them 1 over 10,000. With exception of B, B is 1 over half. So, if we were to multiply this number, 1 over 10,000, by 8 times, we come up with a number about 1 over 1 with 26 zeros after that. I'm sorry, 28 zeros after that. That is the probability that the author of the Quran made 8 guesses, and on every guess he got it right, that's the probability of him doing that. So, I don't think guesswork or coincidence. Coincidence is really bad. You have to tack on a 1 over 500 number ratio for that. So when you do the math, no matter how you do it, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. The numbers of the chances of this is all being by guesswork and coincidence, as what Denny was basically alluding to, the numbers are so ridiculously high, no one would ever assume such a thing. 1 over 1 with 26 zeros after it. That's the probability of it happening. Therefore, on your list of possibilities, you can go ahead and cross out coincidence, and you can go ahead and cross out guesswork. What you should have on your paper, basically, is that leaves one last alternative. One final alternative which have not been crossed out yet. And if you look at that alternative, you will see that it is a source greater than man was involved, greater than man phenomenon. That is the only logical and reasonable expectation. So in conclusion, we looked at all of these other possibilities, all of these other human explanations of all of this stuff happening, and we did not look at this individually, we analyze the evidence collectively, and none of the human explanations hammer out. They don't make sense. We know the prophet could not have been, or the author of the Quran could not have been a scientist. We know this is not guesswork. We know that it is not, coincidence. If we are just looking at one verse and one verse by itself, okay, maybe we could come to that conclusion. But when we look at the evidence collectively, then there is no question that this book, this Quran, could not have been authored by a man. A force greater than man had to have been the source and the author of the Quran. The mathematics simply prove that. So my question for Denny tonight is, if you do not accept this last alternative, then you provide us with a logical and rational human explanation, not for each verse individually, the collective. Look at the evidence collectively. So with that, I turn the mic over to Denny Guerin.
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and grab the mic. I'd like to say thank you very much to Nadir for his rebuttal. I'm going to begin here. I hope everyone can hear me, and I hope I'm clear and coherent, whether or not I was in the last one, in my last speaking engagement. Okay, first off, to begin right up front, Nadir asked me to, at the very end, to look at the evidence collectively and give another explanation for how these eight verses could be correlated with science. And I think I can sum up, and not to be abusive, I apologize if this offends people, but I think I can sum up an explanation in three words: miracle of reinterpretation. And that's what this issue could boil down to. That it's, can you do it with one verse or eight verses or 100 verses? Can you take a verse in a religious scripture and interpret it in a way that it becomes harmonious with beliefs currently held by contemporary scientists. Yes, it's possible. Even with something that, like the Bible, for example, I already gave the example of Genesis, which is so, the literal reading of Genesis, at least in English translation, the literal reading of any of the mainstream English translations of Genesis, the first chapter, is so different from what scientists claim happened with the origins of the universe. It's so different that some fundamentalist Christians have claimed that science is wrong, and a number of Christians have actually lost their faith and become atheists, agnostics, or joined other religions. They actually abandoned Christianity precisely because they felt that there was too much conflict between Genesis and science. Nonetheless, a number of physicists, I already gave one, Nathan Aviezer, and I believe I could think of some others if I had more time. A number of physicists have written books, I can think of two in particular, have written books on why, on how the Genesis can be correlated perfectly with the Big Bang theory, with decoupling of light, etc., and a number of other things. So is it possible that a human being could do it with one verse or 100 verses or 1,000,000 verses, that they could correlate a verse with science? Yes, it's absolutely possible, and that's what I think is one explanation for how something like this could happen. With that, I'm going to try and go back and go over what Nadir said in the beginning. Indeed, he mentioned the algorithm, and I acknowledge his algorithm. The issue is that I'm not saying that all these verses are coincidence. The question that I have up front, which in some sense does fit mildly with his algorithm, but is my own question, and which is a question I will bring to any verse of any scripture that someone says is a proof in and of itself. That there's, like, if someone brings you a verse, it doesn't have to be from the Quran, suppose they bring it to you from the Bible, and say, this verse can only be from God. If that's what they're saying, then the question has to be asked, is it possible? Not is it, but is it, not is it actually the word of man, but is it possible that a man could utter something like this? If the answer is yes, then the verse is not in itself proof. If it's possible for one verse or 100 verses, it's still the same deal. That's in my opinion. Now, with regard to Iran, Nadir actually said, what were the chances that someone would guess a city that nobody else knew about? And the point is that, I'd like to bring this up, I actually never claimed that it was a lucky guess. What I'm saying, my question was, is it possible that a man living on the Arabian Peninsula would know about a city on the Arabian Peninsula? Yes, it's possible. Not is it possible that a man would just guess, you know, a word, a two-syllable word, would just out of thin air pull Iran, and even associated with pillars. The question is it possible that a man living on the Arabian Peninsula would know about something like that? Yes, it's similar to the question, is it possible that today a man would know about Sodom and Gomorrah? Yes, it's possible. And if it's possible, then it's not in its proof in of itself. With regard to the Old Testament and the Talmud, Nadir said that this is actually a red herring of sorts, because Muslims themselves believe that the Old Testament is the Word of God. That's fine, but actually in an objective debate, that's not something that we can cite as a premise, that the Old Testament is the Word of God. I mean, that's something that definitely hasn't been proven. We have to prove that if we're going to use it as a premise. And so, for example, the Old Testament mentioning Sodom and Gomorrah, the reason I brought that up is because would objective thinkers, in an objective argument, if they looked at the Ebla tablets and noticed that the Ebla tablets mentioned Sodom and Gomorrah, something that was mentioned in Genesis, is that proof that Genesis is the Word of God? No, the answer is no, it's not proof. And that's why I brought that up. And no objective scholar would think that the Ebla tablets is proof of some sort of, or at least even hint of a miracle in Genesis. I mean, it's not something miraculous for a text written in a Semitic language to have some vague familiarity with a land in an area of, you know, Semitic speakers, be it in Western Asia, essentially, which is, you know, Palestine or the Arabian Peninsula or those whereabouts. With regard to Aristotle, Nadir pointed out that with the salt and the sweet water, that he made an analogy to eating. Yes, he did, right. And he actually said a number of other things. If you read on in his book in meteorology, he knew about the processes of waters, of how they would condense and evaporate, and he, despite that, he also thought that it was possible for water to generate out of thin air. So did Aristotle make errors? Yes, he made many errors. I'm not disputing that. What I was saying is that Aristotle showed some familiarity with the Pycnocline. And this is the site that Nadir invited us to view, claimed that when the Quran speaks of the barrier, it's a reference to the Pycnocline. There isn't actually a barrier outside of the Pycnocline. the site is claiming that when it speaks of this barrier, it's a reference to the Picnic Line. The phenomenon of the Picnic Line is a separation of waters of different densities, and they're at different densities due to a difference in salinity or, temperature. So Aristotle also made a reference to the Picnic Line. The barrier isn't something separate from the Picnic Line. The Picnic Line is what the site claimed the barrier was a reference to. Okay, quickly with the Dark Sea. Again, the Quran doesn't say anything about depth. It doesn't say anything about depth. What the Quran just says, imagine yourself in a dark sea with large waves and dark clouds overhead and, darkness upon darkness. It doesn't even say if you're even deeply in the water or in the water at all. Maybe just your boat is in water. Dark seas are mentioned, actually, a couple of times. The dark sea near Samos is mentioned in the Iliad, and he speaks about that, this dark sea with dark clouds overhead. Again, is it possible for a human being to be familiar with something like this? Absolutely. Quickly to iron. I apologize. I forgot about the near land, the issue in Surah Ar-Rum when it talks about the near land. Is it possible that, Nadir brought up the point that the word means both, and why would they choose that word? Again, I think let me give you an explanation on that. I'm going to give an analogy in in the Bible, in Isaiah. In Isaiah 40:22, chapter 40, verse 22 in the Old Testament, talks about what in most translations we call the circle of the earth. Now, the Hebrew says Chug Ha'aretz, and it can translate to circle of the earth. Now, Ha'aretz means the earth or the land, and Chug can mean circle, sphere, or orb, like an orb. Like a ball or something like that. So the question is, any Hebrew dictionary of the Bible will tell you that Chug Ha'aretz is actually a reference to the horizon. It's not any sort of scientific miracle. But then the question would be asked, why did they use a word that could also mean sphere, and therefore could also be translated the sphere of the earth, or the orb of the earth? It doesn't really matter. A lot of words have many meanings, but it doesn't mean that the author of the verse intended those numerous meanings. And that's the point that needs to be brought up here. If a person uses a word that has multiple meanings, you cannot assume that the author intended a specific meaning or all of the multiple meanings. And I'm not assuming that with the issue of the near land, that the author intended near land. I'm saying it's possible. And if it's possible, then it's possible for a human being to utter the verse. Therefore, it's... We don't have to assume that in itself. It's the word of God. With iron, actually, Nadir made a slight error. He said that he actually interpreted the verse in Surah Al-Hadid as saying that that iron cannot be produced on earth. The Quran doesn't say that. All it says is "anzalna," we sent down, and then we sent down the iron. It doesn't say specifically that iron can't be produced on earth. That's Nadir's. He's importing that. No offense. But that's all the Quran says, is that we sent down. And the issue of sent down, again, it's possible that a human being could say that. And he actually said that Walt Whitman was in error when I gave the verse from Walt Whitman's poem, Song of Myself. Again, we need to take this into context. The issue of iron is that iron, like all other elements, cannot be produced, with the exception of helium, cannot be produced on this earth. Every element, with the exception of helium and maybe oxygen, has come from outside this earth. It's come from stars. It has to do with the binding energy and nucleosynthesis. Because, the binding energy of all these elements is too high to be forged on this planet, so it had to have come from elsewhere. So that means that everything in your body, with the exception of oxygen, helium, if there is any helium in our bodies, I'm not sure, I'm not a biologist, but in anything, it's the result of things that came from stars. And Walt Whitman, long before people figured this out, said, quote, I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. The journey work of the stars is what's important. Walt Whitman said that. He said, which is essentially can be easily correlated with the fact that a leaf of grass, everything in it, unless there's, with the exception of helium, I don't think there's any helium in leaves of grass, but everything in a leaf of grass is an element that traveled from a star and landed on Earth. According to, common conceptions of binding, not common conceptions, the scientific understanding is the binding energy of the elements. So that in order for us to have that leaf of grass, we had to have all the elements inside it make a journey from a star to the earth. because none of those elements can be forged on the earth. Therefore, Walt Whitman is absolutely correct when he says in his poem, Song of Myself, that I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. How could he say this if he didn't mean it in to be a reference to binding energy? Well, I think that the point is that because we can correlate it with science doesn't mean that he actually intended it to be a reference to that. And that's actually something that applies to the Quran and all these issues. Now, back to the issue of his murder trial, Nadir's murder trial analogy, and an issue of probabilities. Quickly with probabilities, I don't like arguments with probability because they can be abused, and I'll give a great example of this right now. I just checked, and according to, now this may be wrong, but according to the numbers in the list of groups, there's 69 people in this room right now. Now, let's use that, because Nadir gave an example of the possibility that this would all be a coincidence, even though I didn't claim it was coincidence, is 1 over 26, 1 over a 1 with 26 zeros. So essentially 1 times, 1 in 1 times 10 to the 26th power. Well, so 1 out of, you know, divided by 10, 26 zeros, 1 with 26 zeros. 1 over 1 with 26 zeros. So I'm going to give an even greater number. 69 people in this room. Now let's take one person. It's possible that a person, just to show how probability arguments can be abused, it's possible that a person in this room, such as myself, will have at least 9 pairs of socks. It's possible. Now, are they wearing any of those pairs? They could be wearing any one of those pairs, or they could be wearing no socks at all. So the chances that they're wearing any of those pairs of socks or no socks at all is 1 in 10. Now, it's also possible that they could own 9 pairs of pants or skirts or things that go around the legs. Now, for the person in this room, such as Nadir or myself, could be wearing no pants at all or one of those specific 9 pairs, and the chances of them wearing one of those pairs of shorts or pants or a skirt or whatever, or none at all, is again 1 in 10. So the chances of them wearing a combination of the pants and the socks, whatever combination they're wearing, becomes 1 in 100. Now, a person could own 9 different shirts. It could be shirts, t-shirts, sweatshirts, sweaters. And let's assume that they own only 9. The chance that they're wearing any one of those garments that go over the chest, over the torso, or none at all, again, is 1 in 10, if we're assuming they own 9 items that go over the chest. So the chances that Nadir is dressed the way he is, wearing either no socks or a specific pair, and a specific pair of pants or none at all, and a specific shirt or no shirt at all, is 1 in 1,000. And the same would be for me. The chances that Nadir would be dressed the same way that I'm dressed, dressed the same the way he is at the same time that I'm dressed the way I am, becomes 1 in a million. Now, considering there's 69 people, with each person it goes up 3 zeros. The chances that all of us would be dressed in the precise combination that we're dressed in, this precise combination, not any other combination, any other combination would be similar, but nonetheless, this precise combination, the chances that it would reach this precise combination would be 1 over 1 times 10 to the 207th power, i.e. 1 divided by a 1 with 207 zeros next to it. I don't think it's a miracle that we're all dressed like this. I think there's just proof that probability arguments can be abused. And Nadir gave the murder trial analogy. Now, the issue with the murder trial analogy is I think that it doesn't really capture what's going on. Because with these verses, if you're doing 2 verses, 8 verses, 1,000 verses, we can go through them one by one. Is it possible that this first verse could be uttered by a human being? Yes. Is it possible that the second verse can be uttered by a human being? Yes. Is it possible that this third verse can be uttered by a human being? Yes, and so on. If you go through 100 verses like that, nonetheless, you have a collection of 100 verses, and it's possible that each and every one could have been uttered by a human being. I don't see what the problem here is. Then none of it, you can say that you have one piece of evidence, doesn't add up, but if you collect a group of pieces of evidence that themselves don't add up, that somehow it adds up to something collectively that does fit, I really don't agree. I think you have 8 verses, and each one, it's possible that a human being could say it. So if each one is possible for a human being to say it, then it's also possible that a human being could have uttered all 8 verses. And I'm not claiming it's chance. You know, I'm not claiming that Iram is chance. I think that's not what I'm claiming. I'm not claiming it's guesswork. I'm saying it's possible that a human being could have been aware of a city that's near where they live. With regards to the technoclimate, it's the same thing. I mean, with the bottom of the deep, that an ocean is dark, it's possible that a person would know this. And then with the others, these are basically just miracle reinterpretations, such as iron being a reference to binding energy, nucleosynthesis, and other processes by which the element comes from off the stars, or the issue with the orbits and stuff like that. I mean, a number of people believe that there were that the sun and the moon moved in orbits. A lot of people believe that. So I hope this wasn't too incoherent. I think I rushed right through it because I didn't know what Nadir was going to say tonight. Well, I mean, I did, but I didn't prepare very well, maybe. So I apologize if this wasn't coherent. I look forward to Nadir's rebuttal, and I hope I didn't offend anybody with this. With that, I'd like to say thank you very much, and I now yield the mic.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, Dennis Gairon. I'd like to add to this that Nadir Ahmed had finished his 30 minutes initial rebuttal time, and Dennis took over the mic, so he finished his 30 minutes also. We will now move to the closing statements from both debaters. Brother Nadir Ahmed has 10 minutes, so Brother Nadir Ahmed, please come and give you 10 minutes closing time before we move to question and answer, please, inshallah.
Thank you. Basically, to put it in a nutshell, what Denny Hiron is saying, he's saying, I don't want to look at the evidence collectively. That's pretty much what he's saying. He's saying, I don't want to explore what are the possibilities or anything like that. You see, my job here, I'm not here to make the blind to see. I'm not here to give life to the dead. You know, I'm not here to force my views on anyone. Basically, I'm here just to make, you know, what I understand clear, and I used mathematics, and I used it correctly and precisely, which Denny Hiron did not refute. He said, well, some people can misuse it. Even in his analogy, I'm not sure what was the misuse, but anyway, maybe it's some misuse in his head. Okay. He said, I'll tell you how you explain all of these verses. He tried at one time he tried to explain the evidences collectively. He said, I reinterpreted all the verse. I did no such thing. If I did this, then why didn't you catch me in your first 30 minutes, or in your first 1 hour, why didn't you catch me over there if I pulled some kind of stunt like that? I said that in the Quran it is clearly specified that it is a female bee. I said in the Quran it is clearly that the word used in the Quran has a dual meaning of lowest land. How do you explain that? I did not sit here and say, oh, by the way, you see, this verse means like Jeff went up the hill. And actually, when Jeff went up the hill, what that means is that Jeff went to a higher understanding of knowledge. Man, I didn't do none of that. So he had to come and show me where I twisted the verse. And that goes, and actually what he did, I already refuted this argument in my first 1 hour presentation, that this is a common logical fallacy made by atheists. He said, so long as one logical, valid interpretation is valid, then it can be used as evidence. And I proved that in my first, 1 hour. I don't have time to rehash all that information. Denny did not refute what I said. He simply committed the same, he basically repeated the same argument which I already refuted. Rather than refuting what I said, no, he should have came back and said, no, Nadir, if I can spin another logical interpretation which doesn't agree with science, like he did inside with the iron verse, even though the poor attempt, then that does disprove your evidence. He's not actually proving anything. What Denny basically did tonight is that he said, I don't want to look at your evidence collectively, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at each piece of evidence individually. That's pretty much his stance tonight. And as I said, I cannot force people to believe in things. That's not my job here. So my point is that so long as what I told you of the Quran, actually I just let the Quran read for itself. I did not twist anything. He said that I was simply showing that it is possible for a human to make these statements. But what I did, I said, okay, here are the eight possibilities, Denny's. And if it's possible, then which one of these eight are? He doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to touch the algorithm. I cited for you eight of the logical possibilities. He's dancing around it. He will not commit, say, oh, no, it's this. Oh, no, it's that. Or maybe it's a combination of this, and this, A, B, C, D. He won't do that because that is where he feels most comfortable. So long in his heart, he can say for each verse individually, I can come up with a human explanation. That's where he feels comfortable. Okay, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that, but you are not refuting what I said. Anyway, he said about deep dark seas that, well, the Quran didn't mention the level. Who cares? The Quran mentions that at the at the deep dark seas, there is no light. That is what it was stated in the Quran. He said about basically, he did not even answer my question. He's not answering my question about the mirror land, which the Quran. My question to him was, how do you explain that the author of the Quran used a word which one of the meanings is the lowest point, and we know that is the lowest point. Science, they tell us that is the lowest point. He basically said it's possible to have a human explanation. Again, he's just looking at it individually. The issue about Walt Whitman is a red herring. Whether if there is scientific correct statements in any other book, no problemo. We will use our algorithm and we will use it against any book, any place, anywhere. With the statement about the journey working as stars, my response is this, Denny. It could be one of eight possibilities. Look at your algorithm. It's one of those eight. Coincidence, luck, good guess, scientist, observer, and it goes on. I already stated all that. But anyways, I clearly pointed out that there are eight statements in the Quran which agree with modern science. Actually, there's more than that, but I only had time to go over eight. And I said, what are the probabilities of all of this being luck? He admits, yes, the stuff is not guesswork. He admits the stuff is not coincidence. He admits, yes, the author of the Quran is not a scientist. Then if you admit all of this stuff, Denny, then what is the source of all of this information? Again, I'm asking you to look at the information collectively, but he doesn't want to. No problemo. His analogy about the misuse of probabilities, I believe people can misuse a lot of things. I believe people can dupe themselves in refusing to look at evidence. People can misuse anything. Nope, there is really nothing worth refuting over there. So anyway, my point is, and I'm going to just have to repeat myself, here, is that we look in the Quran. In fact, let me pull up my old presentation here, which I was just pointing out, that in that murder trial, if you look at each piece of evidence individually, yes, it has a human explanation, as how Denny likes to put it. I'm using his words. Each piece of evidence, if you just look at it individually, maybe, maybe not, he is a murderer. But when you look at the evidence collectively, you said, okay, hold on a second. You claimed you wrote a letter that you were going to kill your girlfriend. And then you also claimed that, you actually bought a knife that same week. And in your mind, what you're asking is, what is the probability of you doing all of these things? And so your mind is making a probability and you're multiplying it. And then you add another piece of evidence and another piece of evidence. What would you say about the defense attorney who came up on that court date and said, you know what? There is a human explanation for each one of these. On each one of these pieces of evidence, it's very possible that he could not, that my defendant is innocent. People would laugh at him. Anyways, so the same logic, same common sense. I hate to use even the word logic. If we use it to the Quran and we ask the question, how do you explain all of these verses in the Quran, these scientific eight statements in the Quran, which clearly speak about modern science, you will never come up with any other logical alternative other than there has to be a greater source than man who is the author of the Quran. We know this is not guesswork. If you run the probabilities on guesswork, it is impossible. If you run the probabilities on coincidence, it is impossible. We know the author of the Quran was not a scientist. There's no way you could stare at a piece of iron and figure this out, that it did not come from Earth. We know that is not the case. I pointed out that just because you could spin another interpretation, that does not disprove my evidence. I proved that with my analogy of the Big Bang. We know that the author of the Quran, this is not observable. We know this stuff is not. Then what other alternative is left? The only alternative is left is that this can only be from one source, and that is from a greater power than man. Because no man can make eight scientifically correct statements, which is way before his time. Even if all, let's hypothetically say all of the eight statements were inside books which were written before. Let's say everyone, that verbatim was written before. Still, how did the author of the Quran know, hey, you know what? That's the correct one. I'm going to use this concept of how the universe was created about iron versus all of the wrong false beliefs. That argument doesn't work. What? And so anyways, like I said, I only have 30 seconds. If you logically analyze the statements in the Quran, there can be no conclusion, there can be no other conclusion you can make other than that the author of the Quran could not have been a man. It had to have been a greater source. When you look at the evidence collectively, I did not spin my own false interpretations on any of this stuff. So with that, I see my time is up. And my last point is that no other book in the world can demonstrate what the Quran has demonstrated today. And my time is up. Thanks. Oops, hold on. My mic is still on. Hold on, let me turn it off. Oops, hold on. My mic is off.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. That was the closing 10 minutes of Brother Nadir Ahmed. I would like Brother Dennis Giron to come to the mic and use his 10 minutes closing statements, please.
Okay, I'd like to say thank you to the moderator as well, to Nadir. It seems that in 10 minutes we're not going to be able to bring this to a close. So again, I'd like to remind people that if they'd like to see our debate in text, which is a much longer version of this debate that we had over Usenet over the course of 9 months, it's www.joes.com, JOES/home/, and then our last two names, Ahmed Giron, AHMEDGIRON. So I'm going to try and get to this very quickly. Nadir said that if we look at the evidence collectively, there's no other logical alternative than to assume that God is the source, or source higher than man. What other alternative is there? Now, I said that I summed it up in three words, or I tried to sum it up, let's say. And the term I used was miracle of reinterpretation. Nadir took that as me saying that he's been putting a false spin on these verses, or that he twisted these verses. That's actually not what I'm saying. I'm not claiming that at all. What I'm saying is that eight verses have been taken and after the fact correlated with science. Some of them are very clear, indeed, these being female, or at least a feminine conjugation or a feminine word being used for bees. Indeed, that's pretty clear. But other things like the orbits of the sun and the moon, I mean, that's not clear. I mean, a lot of people long before the Quran believed that the sun and the moon were orbits, and so to correlate this with some scientific fact, I don't know. You know, I mean, it doesn't say in what sense these orbits are. Same thing with the Dark Sea and issues like that. Is it possible to take eight verses and correlate them after the fact with science? Yes. I mean, I already cited Nathan Abiezer. He does this with eight verses from Genesis alone. He actually does it with many. And Nadir, I'm sure, could, and I know for a fact, actually, from our debate, can do this with many more verses. He actually had another five examples that he was nice enough not to bring up in this debate, and I appreciate that because it helped us focus a little more. Okay. Now, he brought up the issue that he claimed that I committed this fallacy where I claim that I can bring another interpretation of the verse, therefore it's not evidence. And he said, so long as one interpretation can be correlated with science, then it can be given as evidence. The problem here is that I'm not claiming my interpretation is right and Nadir's is wrong. What I'm saying is this other interpretation possible? And if it's possible, then it's possible for a human being to say such, therefore, you know, it's possible for someone to, you know, do this, to utter this statement, a mere mortal to utter this statement. Now, for example, the near land comes up. Nadir asked me directly. He put out a direct challenge. How do you explain that the author used a word that one of the meanings could be correlated with a scientific fact? I mean, I think this happens all the time. Many words in many languages have many meanings. It doesn't mean that the person who used this word intended the meaning. Am I claiming that he didn't intend this meaning? No, not at all. What I'm stating is that that if it's possible that one meaning was meant, you know, and that meaning is very easily for a man to use, I mean, then there you go. I mean, a lot of words have multiple meanings. Cleave in English is a great example. It can mean to cling or it can mean to separate. It doesn't mean that when someone uses cling that they mean both cleave and separate, you know, or, you know, it has to be taken in context, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that a word has multiple meanings does not mean that the author intended all those meanings. Now, finally, Nadir said, what is the source of all this information? That was another direct challenge that he gave me. And I'm not going to answer that question because I think I can't, and nor was it my objective. If I say the source was Aristotle, then I'm positively asserting that the book is not the word of God. And I said at the outset, I'm not going to positively assert that the Quran is not the word of Allah. So I'm not going to do that. I mean, that's for another debate. What I'm saying is that you have 8 statements, and you could have many more that are being correlated with science, and you can do that with many statements. The fact that you can correlate them with science doesn't necessarily mean that no human being could have uttered them, and that's the point that I'm making. The question is it possible that a human being could have uttered these 8 statements? Yes, absolutely. And I apologize to Nadir if he feels that I haven't dealt with this issue sufficiently. I think maybe further discussion is going to be needed, and I apologize to others who are offended. You can email me to my first name, DENIS_, my last name, GIRON, @hotmail.com. That's DenisHiron, @hotmail.com. Or you can go visit our thread and take part in it. The link that I gave, you can go to that thread. So again, I'd like to thank Nadir, and I'd like to thank the gentleman using the moniker Islamic Brother who moderated this debate. And I hope there nobody was offended. So I'd like to say thank you very much, and I enjoyed this immensely. Pax Vobis.
Assalamu alaikum. Okay, thank you very much, Dennis Giron. That was your closing 10 minutes. Let me ask the brothers, before we take this 5-minute break, let me ask, Nadir, how much time do you have for a question and answer? Okay, Dennis, how much time do you have? You have plenty of time. Okay, we have to agree on a time frame here. Because, as I see, both of you can go on for ages. Okay, 30 minutes, so we'll go in 30 minutes, question and answer. Okay, mashallah. To the brothers and sisters in the room who have been patient with both speakers, also mashallah to the room, and you can say your questions on the mic, if you like, after this 5-minute break. What we would like to see is a question being directed to a speaker at a turn. For example, first Dennis gets a question, then Monkey Pox gets a question. Do both speakers agree that, is there going to be rebuttal to the questions? Is the question going to be able to be rebutted? Have both speakers agree to that? Yes. Okay for rebuttal. So let's agree on 3 minutes for each question, inshallah. How about that? 2 minutes to answer and 1 minute rebuttal time on the question. So we can get 10 questions in at least in 30 minutes. If it goes faster, then alhamdulillah.